Thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos, and you are listening to episode 145 of the Mile High Show. We encourage you to go to milehighshow.com and access all of our archives. You will be treated to interviews and conversations with some of our local and national artists, musicians, a few comics put in there, some authors, including today's guest, former Yavapai County assessor and current author, Pam Pearsall. She'll be talking about her history here in Yavapai, well, her history in general, some of the trials and tribulations that are counted in her new book, Whispers of Truth, starting with some horrible memories of her childhood. She suffered abuse at the hands of her biological father, and capping off with her time and exit out of office as Yavapai County Assessor. So we encourage you to check out her book, Whispers of Truth, which you can get by going to milehighshow.com and clicking on that Amazon link and purchasing it that way. It's a great way for you to get a good book and at the same time support our show. Also supporting our show and therefore supporting the artists, authors, musicians, and everybody else we talk to is through financial support. So again, please, we encourage you to use that Amazon link. We also have an Audible link where you can click and use the code MILEHIGH at checkout. And what you get from there is a chance to get a free audio download that you can choose from over 180,000 titles, as well as a free 30-day subscription to Audible. Everything on there from articles, lectures, other podcasts, of course, their audio books and exclusive Audible-only content. You can get that for free by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. So click that Audible link, use the code MILEHIGH. You can also go to our Support the Show page right there at milehighshow.com and use those links to give us a rating and a review. Those don't cost you a thing, but they go a long way to boost our visibility. So please, milehighshow.com, support the show and give us a rating and a review and maybe even a comment on today's 145th episode with former Yavapai County Assessor Pam Pearsall and current author of Whispers of Truth. We hope you enjoy the show. The gist of what I want to know is your history. So Pam, before we even start there, since you're not with the county, obviously, mm-hmm. anymore, how do folks reach out to you? Have you set up a website for yourself as an author or for the book? Any social media you have, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. How do people find out what Pam Pearsall has been up to recently?
That's right. So I have a website, and it's www.pampearsall.com. That's P-A-M. P-E-A-R-S is in Sam, A-L-L.com. Also, Facebook, I have a Pam Pearsall author.
And the website. Author page separate from your personal.
Correct.
And we've shared some links on there. Mm-hmm. And the book, what's the title and where can folks get it? Can they order it directly from your website?
They can go on my website and hit order, or they can go directly to Amazon.com and Google it and bring it up. They can go to Peregrine Bookstore or the library.
Peregrine Bookstore, right there where you had recently had a reading and a signing and a discussion with some of the local folks. I am going to suggest something else. Now, when they order it through your website, pampearsall.com, does that take them directly to your order, to an order site, or does it direct them to Amazon?
To Amazon.
So do you have an affiliate through them?
Right. I just go right to Amazon.
See, I'm gonna block that a little bit because they can also go. This is give everybody different ways to get there. They can go to milehighshow.com.
Oh, okay.
And use the Amazon button there because then I get a little kickback.
Affiliate. Yes.
But you can also buy anything else there. So if you're a budding author yourself, you can order big boxes of pens or order a new laptop. See, that would give me a lot of kickback if somebody went on there and ordered a laptop.
See, that's the end. Everybody needs to go to your website and order all their Amazon stuff.
Everything. Yes. Right there, the Amazon button at milehighshow.com. But when they get to Amazon through milehighshow.com, what do they plug in? Give us the title of the book.
It's called Whispers of Truth by Pam Pearsall. Didn't that sound great? Whispers of Truth. And they order that. Please order it. You will enjoy the book.
Now, much of the book deals with I want to get on there and read, because I was fascinated by the blurbs I was doing and some of the reviews that I've been reading. And it sounds like, at least from me not having read the book yet, see, that's my way of not doing homework.
Okay.
I like to tell people when I interview somebody that I'm not really familiar with, we've crossed paths a lot through your time with the county and my time with local media. But when I don't know a lot about a subject, or in this case, a new book, I like to let people know it's because I want my curiosity to come out while we're having our conversation. If I know too much, then that kind of dictates where the interview will go. In reality, it's because I'm lazy and I don't like doing homework. But it sounds like the book is broken up into kind of three different segments. Your childhood. Then it transitions into your adult life and the experiences you had with your marriage, and then culminates with the experience in the county office and the trials that came with you leaving office once you were no longer in office. And we want to hit all three of those, but let's talk first about your upbringing.
Okay.
Where was little Pam growing up?
So I was born in John C. Lincoln. I'm sorry. I was born in St. Joe's Hospital down in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And was in Paradise Valley. Isn't that a beautiful place to grow up? Yes, I am an Arizona native, third generation.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I lived in Paradise Valley. Unfortunately, my biological father was an alcoholic. So traumatic young childhood.
Now, this is your first published work?
This is.
How?
Well, I should say this is my first published novel.
No.
Obviously, I've had some official stuff as the assessor published and things like that, more math kind of things.
Yeah, more
not as
technical.
Artistic. Correct.
Yeah. So characterize this book, a novel.
This is a memoir.
Based in fact.
Yes, it's absolutely true.
Fictionalized as far as names and things.
Well, I did change some names.
For legal reasons and such?
Right. Some names I named. If you're a public figure and I have the evidence and it's true, I named you.
So you would.
But if you were not a bad player and I didn't want to hurt you or your reputation or, you know, whatever, then I did change your name if you wanted me to.
The key personalities in the book, though, are pretty much named.
Right. There's a few that I combined just to save space. Mm-hmm. Similar incidents happened, so I combined them, and then I would change the name rather than name them.
Now, so you would classify this as nonfiction?
It is nonfiction. It's a memoir.
Now, you have, I read in one of the reviews, and I don't remember if it was from Courier or not. I'm trying to visualize what it was. It's almost like a disclaimer, maybe that's the wrong term for it, but it was a statement you had, is it in the book or on the cover?
It is in the book.
Dealing with how these are your recollections.
Correct, because it's a memoir, but obviously, in my opinion, I'm the good guy. And and if I'm talking bad about you and you read it, you might say it completely different.
Yeah.
And so that's what the disclaimer says, is clearly through the filter of my own bias.
Yeah. And we as humans, and I'm apt to do this myself in through the show and through, I had a column for a number of years with Prescott News that I would recall childhood memories, I would recall even not child, you know, not that far in distance, things that my wife and I did. And I wrote them as they happened, and then she would read them. My wife would read them more in the cases of my, childhood memories. She lives in Paulden here. She lives locally. She would call me and she says, "That's not what happened. That didn't happen to you. That was your brother Gabe," or that was. It's like, no, that's how I remember it. So we do have the tendency to say things as we remember them. That is our truth.
Exactly.
It might not be your truth. It might not be my brother's truth. It might not be my sister's truth.
Exactly. But if I said I was born in Philadelphia, that wouldn't be true.
Yeah.
So the context is fairly true within the guidelines of a filter like you're talking about.
Now, I'm the youngest of five. Mm-hmm. What was siblings for you?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest of how
many? Of three.
Of three. Mm-hmm. Now, all the same biological father?
Yes.
Now, how was... Talk a little bit about that life growing up as you presented it in the book. With what you're comfortable talking with.
Well, I do. I talk about it in the book. And, of course, that part of my childhood ended when I was only 5 years old. Because at 5 years old, my father ended up going to prison for the child abuse that he inflicted on my brother, my sister, myself, and my mother.
So the three siblings and your mother were all affected by this, from the same father.
Absolutely. So he ended up going to Florence prison. And then from then on, my childhood, after the hospitalization and recovery and all of that, got better. But I detail kind of that in the book, my early childhood.
Now, the abuse that was inflicted on you, was the writing of this therapeutic for you in ways, or had you already?
I don't think so. But what I have discovered is after my book got published, a lot of people have come to me that were friends and I did not know their backstory.
Yeah.
And they've come and told me similar things have happened to them that I talk about in my book. And that has been really eye-opening, how we have miracles that happen to us. We have bad things that happen to us. But we don't necessarily just, share that with everybody.
Yeah.
So that's been really interesting to find out just how persuasive a book can be and how many people are actually affected by child abuse or miracles or a relationship with God that they haven't necessarily shared. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily go to the same church. But, miracles happen. They pray and get answers.
And seeing how you've overcome the dark side of what you had to go through and made a positive out of it by being able to...
I don't want my...
Hi.
I don't want to sound overly religious. Uh-huh. I mean, I totally have a relationship with God, but I don't necessarily wear that out in the front. But in my book, I really do kind of explore being 5 years old, having this happen to you, the horrendous hospital experiences and the recovery, which took a long time. It is why I have the paralyzed vocal cords as a result of the abuse. And I talk about actually a miracle happened where I witnessed an angel and I was healed.
Wow.
And so in the book, I very much in detail talk about that. I was reluctant because you don't want people to say, oh, you're a liar or you're mentally ill or that didn't happen. But then when I wrote the book, I thought, you know what? I'm going to be honest about all aspects. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah.
As I did that, I did not understand how many people actually do have miracles that amazing happen to them and they don't talk about it because it's private and they just don't, they don't want to put it out there. And so that has been such a blessing to me. That's been the best part about writing the book, is to connect with friends that have had similar experiences.
Now, had you planned on writing about your childhood when you sat down and started typing this book out?
No, when I started to write this book, I was angry about the corruption in politics. And I was so mad because nothing was going right. And I felt like I was making the honest choices and people I respected were asking me not to. And so I wrote this book to chronicle that. And then as I took it to an editor, the editor said, you can't ignore the paralyzed vocal cords and why you are the way you are. You have to put it in there. So that kind of drew it out and it kind of morphed into what it became.
Now, what was the response? Now, who's joined us here?
This is my mom. She just walked in on us.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, so I was going to ask, as your editor talked to you about including the... your childhood and your experiences early in life, did you have any hesitation about how your family would react to that? Did you talk to them before you started typing it out? What was the dynamics as far as, because I will tell you this, we're not even talking about traumatic things. When I would write things for my column about my wife and my son, a lot of the stuff revolved around that, and it was just little things like things that happen on our vacations or experiences that would happen at home. My wife hated it. She did not want, she goes, why are you putting this stuff out for people to see? This is stuff that, and it wasn't embarrassing things or personal things. It was just, she goes, I don't want people to know where we went on vacation. I don't want people to know where we shop. She's not, she wasn't really, and she has not in 150, 140 some odd episodes of this podcast, she hasn't listened to a single one, which is fine because now I can talk about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Every once in a while, somebody will rat me out though. But she's very reluctant about me discussing personal things in public. Was that an issue for you?
Well, it was, but I did not share with anybody what was going in my book. My mom didn't read it until after my book was, you know, printed, the
in
first
print
published.
And published, huh? That's gutsy.
Yes. Well, I was very hesitant about it because I didn't want to hurt my mom at all or bring back bad memories. If you read my book, though, you'll realize that I was being threatened by powers that be in the Republican Party that if I was to run for assessor again, they were going to put this stuff out. Not that it would matter that you wouldn't vote for me. They were trying to make life so miserable that I wouldn't run again.
So was this a way for you to kind of stay ahead of the...
No, because by this time I had already ran. They weren't using it. They were instead making up false allegations, reporting it anonymously and having them report it. So I didn't think it was going to come out, but I didn't know if it ever would. And so at some point it's just like, you know what? I'm putting it all out there and then you have nothing to threaten me with anymore. Yeah. And I didn't want my mom to read it because I didn't want to hurt her feelings. She ended up reading it, and she took it very well. So she was very positive. She's
nodding.
Always supported.
She's nodding, so I guess
she's always very supportive, and she loves me no matter what. But you know, she's there to verify the things I tell you about the angel and the subsequent healing and the doctor's reaction are all accurate.
No,
so that's good.
How about your siblings? You said a younger brother and sister?
Yes.
So my girls and a boy?
Yes. Okay. So my sister read it. She loves it. And she's here. She's locally in Chino Valley. She's read it after I published it. I don't think my brother's read it. And my brother was such a child. He was still in a crib. So he's not talked about as much as my sister is.
Gotcha.
But my brother is very loving and supportive too.
Nice.
So, I mean, putting their private business out there, that's unfortunate, but... You know, when you run for something like assessor, you're risking that anyways.
You're basically an open book.
You really are. I didn't think it would be a problem because I was a survivor. But, you know, they twist things to make them ugly any way they want. Politics is a hard sport.
Now, your father, your biological father.
Yeah, let's not call him my father. Let's call him Gil. Because I've been adopted.
Oh, okay. So your father is who? Who do you view as your father?
My father is Jerry Sturdivant, and he adopted me, raised me after all of that, and he's my hero to marry my mom, take on three sick children, and
now,
he's an amazing person.
How old were you when that marriage took place?
About 8, 9. No, I was about 8 or 9.
8, 9. So at the marriage. Yeah. So obviously you knew him before you got married.
Yes.
So that's what she's talking about, the 6. So it was a couple of years before you had that that father figure in the home.
Well, I lived in the hospital for a while.
How long were you in the hospital?
I it seems like forever to me because I was in and out. Mom's here, she could say. And then I went and lived with my grandmother in Yarnell, Arizona. And attended first grade, actually, in Yarnell. That was because I had a tracheotomy. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yes.
I needed a lot of care, and Mom went back to work for Motorola to keep insurance. You know, because she needed insurance.
So again, that extended family there for support to make sure that you and your siblings could heal. Mom can regain her footing.
I think I was very lucky to have aunts and uncles, my mom, my grandparents, all to come and support my mom.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to live with my grandma and get that extra attention.
So biological f- father, Gil, is that what you said?
Yes, and he went on to prison.
And you mentioned, if I went through the reviews correctly, you mentioned him by name.
Yes.
And he was, you talked to him before?
No, he has passed away. So he's no longer with us.
Now, if you need to divert me from any questions, feel free, but did he die in prison?
Oh, no. Or, you know what? You do all of that. You plead guilty to all, and in my book, I detail all what all of that is. He served 4 years in prison. I'm not a fan
of the system.
I'm thinking 4 years was not justice.
Yeah.
Okay, so he served 4 years. He got out, and he never did any. You know, he never drank again. As far as I know, he led a really upright, good life, and he spent the rest of his life trying to repent.
So it was the alcohol is what fueled.
I have no idea. I'm not a mental health expert. I would assume that hopefully, I mean, maybe it was demonic possession. Yeah. I have no idea, but he was an alcoholic. He wasn't drinking the day that he had that mental break.
Now, how long from the time he was released until he passed?
I think he passed in 1992, May of 1992. And
did you have any relationship with him after?
I did. And in my book, I actually talk about the many attempts that he made and the many times that I needed something so I would contact him and get it. And then the relationship would end until I needed something else. I was that kind of person. My sister was a little bit more open.
Yeah.
And then, but towards the very end, we did have a relationship. I had forgiven him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to for your own health.
Yeah. To otherwise, you're carrying that load that obviously isn't your load to carry.
And if this had been his book, and if he had written this book, can you think about, you're an alcoholic, you're making bad decisions, you have a blackout or whatever, you have no memory, and you wake up and you've done that to your wife and your three kids, and you're sitting in prison, what that would feel like, that your whole life would change from this one whatever, you know? So in a way, I think it was pathetic, and I feel bad for him. But I think he should have served more than 4 years.
So was it an ongoing issue, or was this one instance that...
This was, as of child abuse, this was the... In my book, I talk about a couple things. Uh-huh. One, he baptized us in the Verde River in December. I consider that child abuse. And then another night was the stabbing and the shooting. I consider that child abuse.
Yeah.
Or whatever, assault or whatever. So for the children, that was it. There had never before or after been an incident. As far as wife abuse, there had been plenty of that. Yeah. And we had witnessed, some of that.
Yeah. Which in itself, by you being present, not to diminish what your mother went through, but that in itself is, in my eyes, abuse that you had to witness and were aware of.
Well, later as a wife, it is one of the reasons why I just could not stay with my husband.
Yeah.
Is because you just can't expose your children.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen next. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to predict that what happened to my sister, my brother, and I was going to happen, not based on how he'd been as a parent before that.
Yeah. Interesting. Now your movement into your relationship with your husband, a little bit about that, a little background as to
when you read the book, you'll totally see.
I will.
That my sister is the coolest person on this planet. She's other than my mom. She's absolutely hysterical and fun and my best friend. So she gets married and leaves me. Her husband's in the Navy. And she goes to Vallejo, California.
Ah, well, that's my neck of the woods.
Okay. Well, I missed her very much.
Yeah.
So her son has to have open heart surgery. Mom and I go up there and I meet my future husband, who happened to be her husband's best friend in the Navy. He was on the same ship. He was stationed in Vallejo. And conveniently, I get him to fall madly in love with me, propose, and I marry him as quick as possible and get myself up to Vallejo. I'm a neighbor of my sister's. So it was really cool. I was in Vallejo a little bit more than a year, and then we got a station down in San Diego.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for me, my sister went back to Arizona, and I was stuck with a husband and not my sister anymore. So that did not work out. But now, I had this husband.
Now, how is that your sister's husband now?
Oh, no, they've divorced. Her husband was a high school sweetheart, so he was a good friend of mine from high school.
Gotcha.
And but their marriage broke up.
Now, how long were you married to your Navy husband?
I was married maybe 5 years.
Was your marriage based more on the fact that you were you no longer had your sister? Was it kind of a surrogate companion, kind of?
No, I mean, are you asking the breakup? Because my sister
married?
Think that marrying him, he is a bad boy. He was good looking. It was a lot of fun. But I don't know that I would have married him had he not been so convenient being close to my sister.
Gotcha.
Best friends with her husband. And it was just, I kind of thought it was fate. Yeah. You know, this is all going to work out. But I might, you know, talking in today's maturity, looking back then, I was awful young. I might have, should have dated him a little longer.
Yeah.
And really saw what the relationship was rather than diving in so quick.
Was the breakup of the marriage, was that what brought you back to your home state of Arizona? Or?
When I first left him, my parents lived in Arkansas. Jerry and my mom. And so I went to Arkansas, and then I eventually came back to Phoenix.
What brought you back to Phoenix?
Just family. My mom moved back, and my sister already lived up down. She lived here in Prescott.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I always want to be as close to my sister as I can be.
Not me. We tried to get far away from my sister, and she ended up coming to Paul.
Yeah, darn her. Hopefully she doesn't listen to your podcast either.
No, they had many, many years of listening to me. They don't need to hear me not in person. They've had their fill of Matt. I think that's why my wife won't listen. She says, I have to listen to you all the time. Why would I want to listen to you when you're not here? So you ended up in Phoenix, and what was job situation? What were you doing?
I had to obtain my real estate license back before I even graduated high school. And I'd sold real estate. I'd managed real estate in California when my husband was stationed over there. So when I came back to Phoenix, my real estate license had expired by 2 days because that's the way I do things. So I had to retake my real estate license, and then I eventually went back to work in real estate. I went to work for Century 21 Northwest in Phoenix, Arizona, over in Maryville. And I worked there. In fact, that's where I met my current husband.
Who's over there in the
Who's over there
in
the other
room
yes.
on the computer. Now, why throw your hat in the political ring? What prompted that?
Well, so I had been in real estate. That's pretty much what I've done as a career was real estate. I thought appraising would be more conducive for my voice because real estate takes a lot of speaking.
Yeah. Interaction with customers and showing homes and things.
Correct. So I left real estate and I went into appraising back before appraising was licensed. Then you became licensed. Now you have to be licensed. I did that. Then I appraised for a while. And Victor Hambrick was our current appraiser. I don't know if you remember. Our assessor here in Yavapai County. And I used to always joke around that when I grew up, I wanted to be the assessor because appraisers have to wear jeans and hiking boots and climb under, you know, foundations and make sure there's no snakes. And assessors don't have to do that. Assessors get to wear nice red dresses and pretty shoes. And so I'd always joke in my appraising company, I'd say, when I grow up, you know, and I was already in my 40s, when I grow up, I want to be the assessor. So when Victor Hambrick got in some political problems and they were reporting it on the news, my staff said, if you seriously want to be assessor, you would not find a weaker assessor to run against.
Now, was that here in Yavapai?
That was here in Yavapai County. I had voted, but I had never ran for office. I wasn't that politically connected. I just voted, you know. So I go to meetings about school board stuff.
Yeah.
So I went and got a book, How to Run a Campaign. I asked my sister if she would be my campaign manager. She agreed. And we started on the campaign trail. Well, right around that time, we found out that my sister had breast cancer.
Oh.
Yes. So she could not be my campaign manager. She had to do the chemo and the radiation. I would go with her to her chemo treatments, and I was sitting at a chemo treatment with her, and I had like this epiphany that if I won as assessor, I would work for not just important people, but for these people sitting here getting chemo treatments and for everybody.
Yeah.
And I would have to make sure their values really were fair and in line. And so I started giving my speeches like that if elected, I work for you. It was really kind of important that happened to me because I did get elected and then did not expect what was about ready to happen, which was special people come to you, tell you what you better do and what's going to happen if you don't. But because of that epiphany, I was very, very clear what I would not do.
Yeah. Let's backtrack just a little bit so you can educate me, because if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm a knucklehead and an appraiser for real estate. You're talking about how you go in and inspect properties and crawl under and look at the foundation. Summarize it. Give me like the Reader's Digest version of how you go about appraising a property and how you come up with figures, because that does come into play with as the assessor in kind of how the trouble started.
Okay. So as an appraiser, now I am a general certified appraiser. That means I have the highest license that an appraiser can have in the state of Arizona. I can value anything from vacant land to high rises. I can value anything,
including grazing land.
Yes,
which came into play.
Yes, and cryogenic labs. I mean, I could have found, and I have appraised cryogenic labs. Now, this is important because later when I become an appraiser, I become the assessor. I already have this skill set.
Yes.
So, yes, to value something, you typically measure it. And then you look at it and you say, what's the quality of construction? And you do three things. One, if I was going to build this, what would the land cost me? What would the lot prep cost? And what would it cost to build this property?
Mm-hmm.
How old is this property? And you depreciate it. And that's one value. And that's called the cost approach. The second thing you do is, if I just put this on the market and I put it for sale, what do similar properties sell for? And that's called the sales comparison approach. You typically write a report with 3 to 5 similar properties, and you make deductions. This has a fireplace. I don't. And adjustments. Mm-hmm. This has better landscaping. And you come up with that report, sales comparison approach. Then the third approach is, if I was an investor and I was going to invest money, what would the return on my investment be expected?
Gotcha.
And that's called the income approach. If I was doing it on a residential house, what would it rent for and what would be the return? So those are the three approaches. You type them up, and if it's for a bank, you put it on a form, you send it in. If it's for an attorney, you type it up all in words, narrative, and send it to. And so because I was a general certified appraiser with my own appraisal company and staff, I was very familiar with all three aspects on how to do value.
So the first aspect is really the nuts and the bolts, what goes into the property. The second is kind of what other things around have gone through, so you're comparing apples to apples. And then the third is what potentially this can be on income.
For the income stream.
So evaluating property, knowing the market, knowing conditions and neighborhoods is nothing. You're no stranger to that.
Correct.
When you decide to go into the political aspect. Now, how does the assessor differ? That job, the duties as an assessor differ.
So the assessor is charged with valuing everything, and in Arizona, according to the market. So that's very similar to the appraiser's job. However, in some circumstances, the state legislature has given us a formula. They might say, you know, golf courses, we don't want you to give us a market value. Mm-hmm. We want you to do it according to this mathematical formula. So unless they give you a formula, you're trying to hit market. And on grazing land, they give us a formula.
Okay. So is that a way for then things to be consistent across the state?
Well, right. So there's 15 counties in Arizona, and they want us all to do it the same. And so they give us a formula for grazing land. And the reason they give us the formula is they want to keep food affordable.
Gotcha.
And so if I was to go in and say, gee, an investor would pay this much, or the market would support this much, well, that farmer might not be able to afford his taxes, you know, for the to graze cows. So they don't want us to do it that way.
Gotcha. And again, consistency, so that landowners, farmers, and the general public can kind of have a ballpark of what things are going
exactly
for, as opposed to the same size land in Southern California obviously is different than it would be up here, and you don't want that sticker shock. So this allows people to kind of have a general idea of what land is worth, what it's appraised at.
Right, and this is for property taxes, not for a bank loan or anything like that. And so they want you to be fair to everybody and do it consistent for everybody, not give anybody a favor at the expense of someone else.
So your first election, the first one that you're prepping for, as your sister, your best friend, is going through a horrible event in her life with her sickness, you're getting ready to enter into elected office, which, and please take this the right way, in my dealings, we talked off mic, I'm not a political junkie. Politics make my eyes glaze over most of the time. I'm more interested in the personalities behind the offices. Those are I think are more interesting stories. So please take this the right way, and I've told this to other politicians I know. If you're going to run for office, I think you got a couple screws loose anyway, because that's just opening the doors to the microscope, especially in small towns, because we all know each other from shopping at the grocery store and buying a cup of coffee and gassing up our cars. We're all neighbors. Most of us are friends or friendly. To be under the microscope that close, to me, there's nothing that could make it worthwhile.
So when I think back,
why did you do it?
When I think back, I was so innocent. I honestly thought, and I actually told Scott Hoare, a reporter, this. I honestly thought that the assessor was a technical job. They were just appraising the whole county. It's not political like a board of supervisors. You're not making decisions about water. You're not making decisions about roads.
More of an employee as opposed to an official.
Right. It's a technical. It's math.
Political, yeah.
2 + 2 is always going to equal 4. I thought nobody could argue with that. I would later discover that wasn't accurate. But I thought math is math. You do math correctly and nobody will ever argue with you. You just do it right. And I had a lot to learn.
Innocence.
Right. And I honestly thought it was not political and I just do it right. So I didn't think it was going to be a problem at all. Later, I found out that actually assessor is one of the most political jobs because you have the data on everybody who owns what and what their values are. And the decisions you make affect their pocketbook.
And it's dollars and cents.
It's dollars and cents.
How did that first election go? You were running against who now?
I was running against a man named Victor Hambrick. And he was the incumbent.
And you had mentioned he had gone. And this is, what year is this? What year are we talking
2008.
About? 2008. I got here in 04, but I was north of, I actually lived in the county at the time, but I was, I was taking pictures and shooting ball games. Again, politics, not my foray. So this is a few years after I moved in here. I was unaware of that. That name does not ring a bell, sorry to say.
But what does Elise Townsend ring a bell?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, she was a developer. She ended up leaving town and not paying a lot of her bills.
Gotcha.
She's in prison now because I think she closed a bank account after some checks were written.
Now, was he in, was his political linked to that?
Yes, they were trying to link him with her. I don't know that they were successful, but you know, it just takes the rumors.
But,
and that's what was going on.
So you went into the political arena at a time when he wasn't at his strongest for whatever reason.
Right. He was mired in all of this kind of gossipy stuff going on.
Again, it's small town America.
Yeah, I have no way of knowing if any of that was accurate or not. In fact, having ran the assessor's office for 8 years, it didn't look like he'd done such a bad job. It looked like he had done okay.
So how did the election turn out? Obviously, you were successful, but what was the...
I won by a landslide. I think I surprised everybody. I know I surprised me. I thought I might win. but I thought it was going to be close.
Now,
but I won more than 10%.
Talk about election night. Mm-hmm. Was this one of the Whiskey Row nights as far as...
I was at the Assampip because...
Yeah.
You might not remember this, but Georgine Lockwood was running against Carol Springer.
Yeah.
And Georgine Lockwood, I thought, was probably going to win. I thought she was going to win. And so she had this wonderful event at the Hacienda, and she invited me because I didn't know if I was going to win or not. I didn't want to have a victory party and spend the money if I lost, right? I mean, I was like, if you lose and you still have to, what, smile in front
of
everybody?
Got a lot of extra balloons.
Yes. So I went to Georgine's victory party with my smile and my husband, and she lost, and I won right there. It was so embarrassing. In fact, they have a photo. There was a photographer, Matt Santos.
No, Henshaw. Matt Henshaw.
He took a picture.
Is that you in the hallway?
Yes.
I think you were on. Were you on the phone?
I was with my mom.
One of his. Matt's a very good friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
We're very tight. He's actually been on the show several times. One of my close friends here, that is one of his favorite photos and one of my favorite photos that he's taken.
Okay, well, I dived into the hallway to call my mom and say, I won, but I didn't want to be like that happy in front of all these supporters of poor Georgine. Yeah. I love Georgine. I was sad she lost, but I still was really happy I won. So I dived in, did not pay any attention, and he was taking photos.
Great photos.
So it was memorable. I mean, you can totally see how happy I was. Yeah. Can you imagine? I had no clue what was ahead of me.
Now, so
should not have been that happy.
Your term of office is that a 4 year?
It's a 4 year term.
How did that go? How what was your first day of office like? What when you come into work? What were some of the things you had to do?
Well,
as
the
far
first
as
day,
prepping yourself and prepping your staff and
yeah,
things.
The first I have 60 employees as the assessor. So the
60?
60.
Okay.
So the first day is really to have a meeting, have all the employees there, assure them that change happens.
Yeah.
But from their perspective, the policies were going to be about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Just continue on and do a good job. And, you know, they're all afraid. So we had two meetings, one in Cottonwood, where I have some staff, and one in Prescott. And that pretty much filled my first day. But my very first day, I had an employee. I won't name her. But she had decided she just wasn't going to work, and she was going to sit in a chair because she had some issues with Victor that now that he was gone and I was there, she thought she could go back into personal property department instead of customer service where he had moved her.
Yeah.
And so my very first day was like telling her, now I had an appraisal company, so I thought you had a little bit more power as the director of a department in the county than you actually do. You have to run everything through HR as a director at the county. And so I basically called her on the phone because she was sitting in the lobby not working. And I said, you can go to work or you can go home and decide if you want a job. Later, I would never do that because you have to go to...
Oops.
But that was my first day is basically telling her work.
Chain of command thing.
Yeah. You know, later I learned, no, you would... You document it. You would talk to HR. You talk to the county attorney. You don't just decide that you're going to fire somebody. She went back to work, though, which was lucky for me because I would have fired her. So that was my first day.
Now, was the office, were the duties, was your day-to-day kind of what you expected as far as what you needed to do as the assessor?
Right. I was very busy. I did tell my husband when I was running my campaign that when I got elected, he'd be able to see me more. I'd be more available. That was not true because I learned as assessor, you work a 40-hour, well, when I worked, it was a 40-hour work at the office, and then there would be speeches and presentations and interviews. So you're working at least 50 hours.
Yeah.
You know, there's city council meetings and it's a big county, a lot of towns.
Yeah.
So you're pretty busy, but it was pretty much what I thought.
Now, how did things run those first 4 years? How was your interaction? How was your relationship with the supervisors and staff? And
The board of supervisors were, the first 4 years, pretty fair to me. We only had three. We had Carol Springer, Chip Davis, and Tom Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the three. Later, we moved to 5.
Yeah.
But we only had the first, we had 3, and we had Julie Ayers as our county administrator.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic employee. She was wonderful. And so as far as my interaction with them, it was fine. I did a lot of town hall meetings with all of them. Mm-hmm. Very early on is when I discovered about the agricultural issues, and I started updating those values. But it took a couple years before anybody got offended.
Now, what are those issues? What was so, the genesis of those problems?
Okay, so I think it was the very first week in office. It was very early. We received a complaint through the Department of Revenue. So the Department of Revenue regulates all the assessors in the state of Arizona to make sure we follow the law. We don't have a boss. The voters are our boss.
Yes.
But there are oversight. So they brought to my attention that somebody had sent a complaint to them that said the Yavapai County Assessor's Office is giving favors to the agricultural community and not following the law. So the Department of Revenue said, look into it.
Yeah.
And if it's true, fix it. Because I was a brand new assessor, I wouldn't have been responsible for it. But if it continued, I would be.
Yeah.
So I walked back to the agricultural file cabinet where all the files are kept. And I discovered very quickly there was a huge problem. And so it was the very first week I knew that there was something to clean up with the agriculture. And basically, it boiled down to things just had not been updated for at least 30 years. The law says you have to update it every single year like everybody else.
Yeah.
But the whole, if you were classified agriculture, we may not have looked at it again for 30 years. You might not be agriculture anymore and be getting that value. But whatever, your value was even frozen at $7.56 an acre. That's what the value was, not the taxes. And that was supposed to change every year based on a formula that had not, it didn't look like it had been applied for 30 years.
Now, in metro areas that 100 years ago, 50 years ago, were agriculture, had ag zoning and properties in it, a little different than this area, which is very steeply ingrained ag, cattle, farming. In your opinion, or in what you found, is that why it stayed that way? Because the families that had been involved in that industry?
I have suspicions as why it stayed that way, but I don't know for a fact why it stayed that way. All I know is that the law says that you apply a certain formula every single year and update the values. And so sometimes the formula might make the values go down, you know, in drought years and things like that. And then sometimes the formula might make the values go up in, you know, rainy years and stuff like that. Their value had never fluctuated, not one penny for 30 years. And it had to. If you followed the formula, if the cap, okay, I don't want to get too technical on you, but there's something.
You know my brain is limited. Okay, good.
But there's something called a cap rate, and the Department of Revenue calculates it according to the law. And they give it to the assessors every single year. So we're supposed to just take that cap rate and divide it into the average rental. Okay, it's just it's just math. But
2 + 2 should equal 4.
Right. So if the cap rate changed every year, there's no way the value stayed exactly the same. But it did, and it had for over 30 years. So we did the math and updated
what were
the value.
Results?
Well, the first year we did the math, the values changed to $25 an acre.
From $7.56
an acre to $25 an acre.
And now, what does that do to property tax?
Well, not much, because property taxes can only increase, and again, there's another formula, but let's say 10% per year is the maximum your property taxes can increase, and that's oversimplifying it. But the people I'm dealing with don't necessarily understand taxes like I do. So if they see their value tripling overnight, they assume their taxes are going to triple overnight. That's not what's going to happen. Their taxes were going to increase 27 cents an acre, and it would take 7 years for that to phase in. So it wasn't even going to increase at 27 cents in one year. I sent them letters to explain all that. I sent them graphs But, you know, when you get a letter from the government, unless it's a bill, you might not even read it. I don't think they ever really understood. I think they thought their values got tripled and they were afraid.
To your recollection and ballpark it, how many properties and how many property owners are we talking about?
Well, we're talking only about 95 property owners in, in all of Yavapai County. But we're talking vast amount of property. I mean, when you own a ranch, it might be 2,000 acres.
Yeah.
So Yavapai has a lot of ranching, but not necessarily a lot of owners.
But
let's say 400.
100, just shy of 100.
Well, let's say 400 owners and that 95 are what actually sued because a lot of people didn't join the lawsuit.
Okay, now how did the, what was the genesis of the lawsuit? Just to challenge your findings?
Right, so in the very beginning, the because it's a statutory formula, everybody saw the same increase. If you were classified as grazing, I also updated farming, but farming didn't react like the grazing did.
Gotcha.
So it was the grazing, the cattle growers association eventually filed a lawsuit and said, we think that you should have, and I don't want to get too technical with you, but they said, we think you did the math wrong because you should have included BLM rentals.
Gotcha.
And land that's rented from the government. And that should have been in your rental. We said, no, because that's not an arm's length transaction, so it doesn't need included. They disagreed. They filed a lawsuit. The judge agreed with us. Mm-hmm. Although he agreed with us, though, he did lower the value from my 25. I think he lowered it, I don't know, to 18. I don't think it made much of a difference tax-wise. So it was a win for us because the argument was, does it need to be arm's length or not? And we won that. So I won the battle. But then I didn't win the war because they decided to just take me out of office.
Well, you win the lawsuit, story's over, right?
No? Right. So I won.
Should be.
I won the lawsuit.
Now, where is this? What year are we talking about?
I don't think they filed until I took office in 8. I don't think they got upset until like 10. They probably filed in like 11 or 10.
Okay.
We don't end up in court. I mean, I get through my first term without a challenger. So I win my second election with no challenger.
Gotcha.
And then right around that time, when they lose their lawsuit, then they just decide there's other ways to take care of this problem.
And this problem being you.
Yes, I was the problem. And I'm so likable. But I think a lot of ranchers honestly felt that they were being picked on. I mean, Andy Grossetta told me his whole life the value had been $756 an acre. So he didn't think it would ever change. He just thought that was like, that's the value. He didn't know that it would ever fluctuate. So a lot of people just like, the only thing that changes is the assessor. And they didn't understand, no, this is just the law.
So the law states it should change or at least be reviewed.
Right.
And
the math applied.
Run through its formula every year. That's what the law says.
Mm-hmm.
Tradition says this is what it is. This is what it's going to stay.
That's what some assessors before me had done. And the problem with that, I mean, I'd be happy to do that if that's what the state legislature did. That would be fine. But the problem with that is, as your house, think over the last 30 years what happened to your house values.
The paint peeled a lot.
Right. So as your house values go up in assessment for property tax purposes, and this other whole group of property owners don't, that shifted the taxes that they once paid from them to you. And I have graphs to show that. In the beginning, let's say they paid $11 for taxes. By the time I took office, they might be paying $2 for taxes. Their values stayed the same, but their taxes were going down because everybody else's values were going up. So it was unfairly shifting the burden. And it was only a few property owners, but it was, you know, a lot of acreage.
So this goes back again to your original campaigning of making sure if elected, you're going to make sure everybody's treated fairly and with the same brush.
Right. So I innocently stepped in and thought 2 + 2 = 4, and it's just math, and I updated it. But then when I started getting at first encouraged, to be nice to this certain class of people and ignore it.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't do that because of the unfairness. And then later when I got threatened, well, I just couldn't do it. That I worked for everybody.
And ultimately, if there's a discrepancy or the DOR looks at it and says, no, this is being done wrong, ultimately it falls on your shoulders because you're entrusted to make sure it's the law's upheld.
Right. And so I was elected to do that.
Yeah, and your liability then is on the rise because you're the final say-so.
Right, and an assessor has some discretion, yeah. but not to freeze something for 40 or 50,
and not
30
to break
years.
The law.
Right, that's right.
So your re-election, your second term begins in 12?
Yes.
And is that also when the expanded supervisors come
right,
aboard?
So now we change from 3 to 5 Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm. and at the same time, I have really gotten on the radar of these Categorizers Association.
Now, what's the why to the 5? Is it just
because our population gotcha. Went to 200,000, so the law says that you gotcha. Go from 3 okay. to 5.
Now this is the lawsuit's going through at that same time.
Right around that, it settled. I mean, I won.
Yeah.
Right after that, right okay. after they took office.
So when did it go from? You're doing your job and, well, everybody's not happy to knowing that it was Pam versus, when did that change?
Well, a couple, and this is why my book kind of gets entertaining, because then we take time, it's just, it wrote itself, the book did, because it's a perfect storm. I've made a certain class of people unhappy. The other people don't realize, so they're not like,
yeah.
although I did get a lot of support and the people would email me and stuff and saw it. At any rate, we have 5 Board of Supervisors. They're hearing from their constituents that are ranchers.
Yeah.
And so they're coming to me and they're saying, you know, politicians are usually nice and you're not, you're being kind of harsh. And I'm trying to explain to them the law and math. I'm even being told to say some things are ag that I do not think are ag.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps them if it's commercial and I call it ag, that's all I have to do
yeah.
to drop their taxes enormously. So I'm starting to get a lot of backdoor pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really wondering what should I do. Well, then the board is pretty much getting more and more by the board. I'm talking about the county administrator, uh-huh. the board of now Julie's gone. Julie Ayers was county administrator. Around the same time, we get Phil Bourdon.
Mm-hmm.
He's the new. So I have a new board of supervisors. I have 3 brand new board of supervisors, and 2. I still have Tom mm-hmm. Thurman and Chip Davis that I'm aware of, but the other 3 are newbies.
Yeah,
a new board of county administrator, and their new attorney, because it used to be Dave Hunt, but now it's Jack Fields. So we have a lot of new people upstairs. I'm on the bottom floor. They're on the 3rd. And they want a certain thing. And I don't want to give it. And so now they're pushing. And now they're demanding. And I'm still not doing it. And then they start threatening. And the threats are like, you have to. And I'm like, no, I don't. Because I work for the taxpayers. I don't work yeah. for you.
Now, threats typically will be, do this or. What was the or? What was the?
We'll take care of you. We'll you'll be sorry. Those kind of threats, and I'm like, braver than I would not have been this brave had I known what was about ready to happen.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, there's nothing you can do. I work for the taxpayers. I mean, you can be snotty to me. You can find somebody to run against me.
Yeah.
But I don't care. My husband promises to feed me no matter what. So if I'm not the assessor, life goes yeah. on. I thought that was the worst thing that could happen. But I was about ready to find out it wasn't. And what they did was, budgeting season came up, and they said, we're going to take employees from you. So many employees that you can't even do your job.
Yeah.
You're talking about following your job. You're talking about following the statutes. Guess what? We'll just take your employees, and we'll do it for you.
Huh.
So they start saying they're going to take, now it's on. I told them that's against the Constitution. It's against the law. You can't. And they're like, huh. I think you maybe should have rethought those ag values now, huh? they take $1 million. They sweep $1 million out of the assessor's budget. I think they took six cars out of the car. Now, remember, my appraisers go out and measure. And they have to list all the components, dual pane windows, comp roof, whatever, so that we can value your house. But they take six cars. They take $1 million out of my budget. And they take 10 employees. So out of 60 employees, they leave me 50. They take 10. They take my conference room. And they take, they're called cartographers. They're mappers. They tell me who owns what. They take them and they put them under the board of supervisors. And that was what was going to happen if I didn't do my ag the way they wanted. I just didn't know. So now I know, and they did it. So we file a complaint with the attorney general. I don't know if you followed all of that.
Vaguely.
Okay.
And I've done some review in the past couple of days.
Okay. So we follow, we long story short, all the assessors write a letter. That doesn't work. Finally, a question is posed to the attorney general by Sheila Polk, the county. And the attorney general says, that would be illegal. That would be against the Constitution. No, the board can't do that. He said it would be breaking the law if the board did it. The board had done it for 9 months by the time we finally got an answer. But he said it would be illegal, but they already had done it for 9 months. So they gave me back the employees and gave me back some equipment. So it was a really, really, really ugly year.
But
in the meantime,
the relationship between you and the board is now
gone. Destroyed. It was a nuclear option one to take those 10 employees to. I mean, it was just, yeah. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, in the middle, oh my gosh, how did I forget to tell you this? So in the middle, they say they're going to take my 10 employees. And I think I'm so clever. The county administrator, Phil Bourdon, his wife works for the assessor's office. So in the middle of all that, I am talking to the board of supervisors and I'm saying, is there anything I can do that you won't take these 10 employees? And they're saying, well, think outside of the box, which they probably mean think about your ag values.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking outside the box. And I think I will save enough money that they can hire their own mapper because they're claiming that they need a mapper. And so I say, I'm going to go ahead and get rid of the county administrator's wife. I'm going to. And honestly, it wasn't to punish him. It would have worked out had it not been his wife. They wouldn't have been. So that is what really triggered the nuclear option, because now it was really on.
You made it personal.
So now not only did they take my cartographers, they took my whole title department.
Yeah.
So not only the people that say where the property's located, but when it transfers, who now owns it.
Yeah.
So they really ripped the assessor's office apart.
So that brings us up to 16 election?
Oh, no. Yes. I think it brought us up to December of 15.
Okay. And then your second term is winding down.
I'm now in an election mode because it takes about a year to run an election.
You're going to run again?
Right. And I'm going to run again. You know, I didn't really want to run again, but I couldn't identify anybody that would be qualified to do it. There were people in the office that might be qualified, but with the toxic relationship with the board, they would not have won, and they would have to resign from work to run.
Gotcha.
And so I thought I was not happy. I was losing weight. I was not happy. But I felt like, because I'm religious, I have a real testimony of God, and I felt like I will run and do the best I can. And if God wants me here, I will be reelected. And if God doesn't, then he's released me from this. Plus, I just didn't want them to win.
Yeah.
So there was my ego about, I'll show you. You can't get rid of me. But then there was also the, I don't want to do this. Yeah. And so I'll just run. We'll let God decide, and we'll just see what happens.
I read a quote in one of the interviews, and I don't know if it was from your book or you speaking to a reporter, that losing was actually winning.
Yeah, I think so.
And that sounds like what you were explaining. It's you'll do your best, but if that means you're no longer in office, you'll take that as a win, because now you can, again, like you did as a child, you can start healing from this.
Right, and I think it's like being released from a calling, because even the fact that I got elected, that I brought the attention to the favors that were happening, mm-hmm. all of that might have been my fate. Who knows?
Now, when the election cycle's over, you were, and I don't want to say unsuccessful in your run, because
I'm a loser. You can admit it.
Well, no, because it sounds like that was the best situation anyway, is you separating from that.
I think in the long run, yes.
When do you decide to sit down and start typing?
I actually started to write this book about 6 months before I lost my election.
Gotcha.
My daughter was pregnant with twins, and it was a high-risk pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so her husband's in the military. So I'd went to help take care of her during the very end. She couldn't drive. She didn't fit.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I started my book, when I started to take care of her. So I did not know I'd lost the election yet. But I knew the 10 employees had been taken and all of that. So that's when I started.
Now, in the midst of this, there were issues with family members being hired, working in your department, but it doesn't sound like that was a unique situation. I mean, we live in an area, again, we'll harp back to it, we're a small town, even though the county is large. This is still, it's not a big metro area. To just like anything else, if you go work at a store that hires 150 people, chances are that you're related to somebody in there. You go work at a factory, chances are there's going to be family there. Why was it such a big issue that you had family working in your department?
Well, I think they wanted me out of the office.
Yeah.
And they wanted to find something. But when you look at my life, I'm Mormon. I don't drink alcohol. I'm really quite boring. And so you want to find something. They had threatened that they were going to use this early event in my childhood, but that's not going to stop anybody from voting. That at the best will just embarrass me to not run, because I don't want to bring that up again. So when that didn't work, what happened was David Hess filed an anonymous complaint, or he forwarded an anonymous complaint to the sheriff's office, and it claimed that I had hired a family member, Laura, a niece-in-law.
Yeah.
She's not my blood, but through my husband. At any rate, once that complaint anonymously gets received by the sheriff's office, the sheriff is an elected official, and he can't investigate it. He has to send it to Coconino to be investigated. And that was right at the end of my and it's a long story because they don't. But at any rate, we got the documents from the sheriff to show that Judd Simmons, who was running against me, David Hess was on his campaign. And Sheila Polk had written, it was David Hess that forwarded this anonymous complaint. So think how clever that is.
Yeah.
I can type up anything that I allege against anybody, send it to the sheriff, and then it gets forwarded to a complaint, and it makes headlines. And then I have to try to respond, but it's right there at the end of the election. So that pretty much was the end. They had raised a lot of money. They'd done flyers, and it was really, I don't know if you remember, it was an ugly, ugly, painful campaign. But that's what would happen, is they were forwarding allegations that were not right, but I didn't have any time or money to disprove them.
So your two terms and then the 2016 election, what's your takeaway? What do you learn? If you can summarize in a sentence or two, what you take away from your experience as the assessor?
Well, I would say I met some elected officials that were so honest and just wanted to serve their constituents and be a public service and then leave and go back to their career. And I'm very pleased in Yavapai County we have those kind of representatives. I think that when you're an elected official, people are so nice to you. They come up and they act like you're so important and everybody wants to be your friend, that sometimes you get fooled and you think you're a little bit more important than what you are. You forget that you're a public servant and you think you're like, I don't know, pretty darn clever, an emperor maybe. And you start figuring out, this really wealthy, important person wants this from me and I can make it happen. Or I can push this other person to make it happen. There's a lot of temptation and there's a lot of that that's going on.
Yeah.
Even in our small community. And I think it's happening nationally too. And so, I mean, I think as voters, it's really hard to know what the truth is. I used to get a flyer and I would think that that was somehow the news. Now I get a flyer and I don't pay any attention because it's just... it's just advertisement. You know, this latest one came out. It's against one of the candidates for mayor. And it says, she fleeces the taxpayers. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
And it says, proof. And you flip it over, and it's just a medical bill. And there's no proof of any fleecing of any taxpayer. But it just says it. And I think that's unfortunate that that's allowed. Yeah. Or that anybody would stoop that low.
So what's on the horizon? What's next for you?
Well, I want to be a best-selling author.
You got another one in the works?
No, this is the one I've done. I need to market it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good book. I think when you read it, you'll like it. I on Amazon have 36 reviews.
Nice.
Five and a half stars. Five is maximum. I think it's 4.5 stars is the average. And I've been asked, how did I get the reviews? Well, those are just organic. I didn't, you know. So I think that's really good for a first book. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you read it.
Now, we have barely scratched the surface, and that's kind of the intent of my talks with people, because we want to direct people to, you know, in an hour, you're not going to get the gist of the full story. So we have just scratched the surface. I'm anxious to get into the covers of that book. Again, the name and then where folks can get it.
Well, it's called Whispers of Truth by Pam Pearsall, and you can get it right on Amazon. You can just type that in.
And go to milehighshow.com.
Yeah, go to my... yes, go to his show.
Now we got the commercials done, too.
Right, his button, because he'll get extra money. Or you can go to pampearsall.com.
And you can walk on into Peregrine.
Yeah, walk
which
into...
is,
or the
right
library.
Downtown, and on the library.
And if you're an Amazon Prime member or whatever, I think you can get it free on Kindle.
Oh, nice.
You can get the download if you're a member.
So again, the title, Whispers of Truth.
Whispers of Truth.
And Pam Pearsall, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to seeing what happens next with you and with our local politicos and how things wash out over the next several years.
Yes.
It's some folks find it fascinating. I get too frustrated with politics.
Politics is an ugly sport. It really is.
But for me, it's getting to know the people behind the offices, behind the posters, and I think we got a nice taste of that here today. So thanks.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Well, that was it. Our conversation with former Yavapai County Assessor and current author of Whispers of Truth, Miss Pam Pearsall. Thank you, Pam, for sitting down with us. And thank you, the listeners, for the continued support and following and downloading of The Mile High Show. We again encourage you to pick up Whispers of Truth, either locally at Peregrine Books in downtown Prescott, at our local libraries, or if you choose, go to milehighshow.com and click that Amazon link and have it sent right to your home. And in just a matter of a day or two, you could have Whispers of Truth on your doorstep. That is, of course, a great way to support our guest today and also to support our show by using that Amazon link. And please, we encourage you also to go to the Support the Show page at milehighshow.com and click one of those links. Give us a rating and a review and let us know, maybe even comment on today's show. So please do so. And again, thank you for supporting The Mile High Show.